All Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Thursday, March 28th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
It's been 9 years since New York banned hydrofracking for natural gas. Now Democrats in both houses have passed measures to ban a new type of fracking developed in China.
If we don't close this loophole sooner rather than later, it is going to essentially open up the proverbial gateway for further exploration, which is also going to be problematic.
It's unclear whether Governor Hochul will pass it into law.
Fire departments in the North Country are facing a decline in firefighters and an increase in calls. Some communities are considering having paid staff or paying new recruits a stipend.
I mean, I think anything like that will be a tremendous help. Any effort to try and recruit younger members, whether or not it be enough, I don't know.
And we'll listen again to the story of the woman who created by hand many of the public signs you see in the Plattsburgh area. All that's coming up in Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Gray and Gray and Associates, CPAs, an accounting and financial services firm in Northern New York with offices in Canton, Potsdam, and Spring Hill, Florida. GrayCPAS.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. The vast majority of the North Country and New York State's fire departments are staffed by volunteers and have been for over a century. But as the region's population has aged and declined over decades, fire chiefs say they're struggling to recruit new members, and their ranks are much smaller than they were even a decade ago. Amy Fireisle spoke with Saranac Lakes fire chief.
Brendan Keough has a long history as a volunteer firefighter.
My great-grandfather was a member of the fire department here in Saranac Lake. My father was a member of the fire department.
Keough has acted as Saranac Lake's fire chief for 14 years now. He says recruitment has been the single hardest part of the position.
Once you do get members to join, I find that it's harder and harder to retain those members for, you know, more than 5 years.
Like the majority of North Country communities, Saranac Lake's population is aging, and the bulk of its firefighters are in their 50s and 60s.
And as those firefighters age out, so to speak, for one reason or another, you know, we're not replenishing those firefighters that are aging out.
Keough says when he joined the department in the late 80s, there were about 65 members. Now they've got 35. But in reality, it's even less than that.
You know, how many are actually active members? And of those active members, how many of them are actually certified to be interior attack firefighters?
He says it's a very limited number that go into burning buildings or do search and rescues. Keough says there are lots of factors that play into smaller departments.
Family dynamics have changed. Work dynamics have changed. You know, COVID certainly had a factor.
But the trouble for Saranac Lake and the other hundreds of volunteer fire departments in New York is that need hasn't declined at the same rate. The state says that 75% of volunteer fire departments report a decrease in their number of volunteers, while also reporting an increase in the number of calls they receive. That presents a pretty obvious problem.
A lot of the older members in the department are of the same mindset that, you know, if something doesn't change and we're not able to recruit the next generation of firefighters, there will come a tipping point where they may have to switch to either a combination paid volunteer department or a fully paid fire department.
Keough says if Saranac Lake had to pay for firefighting services, it would increase local taxes substantially. According to a 2023 financial impact study from the Firefighters Association of New York, volunteer fire departments save state taxpayers more than $3 billion each year. But fewer people are volunteering these days. Across the U.S., rates of volunteerism have been on the decline since 2010. Keough says he's an optimist. He hopes this is a low point.
Yeah, I have to believe the pendulum at some point is going to swing. It has to swing.
And he thinks there are ways to incentivize participation.
I would love to see like a student loan forgiveness program.
Keo says sometimes it's hard for folks to volunteer because they have so many financial commitments. Forgiving loans could make it worth it. On March 3rd, the state launched its very first training stipend program. It pays volunteer firefighters between $750 and $1,250 for completing certain trainings necessary to serve as a firefighter. Keo says it's something.
I mean, I think anything like that will be a tremendous help. Any effort to try and recruit younger members, whether or not it'd be enough, I don't know.
Keo says he truly believes there are lots of people out in his own community that would love serving as a firefighter if they gave it a try. He says it's a chance to have a positive impact on other people's lives, and not just by fighting fires.
And it could be going to senior citizens' home whose smoke detector's beeping. Sometimes it's the little things that all the volunteer firefighters do in the community consistently throughout the year that really actually are the most rewarding.
Keo is actually retiring as Saranac Lake's fire chief this month, but he's not leaving the department and will continue to serve as the dive captain. He hopes to see his department and others across the region grow in the coming years. Amy Feiereisel, North Country Public Radio.
Listening to Northern Lights right here on North Country Public Radio. It's 7 minutes past eight. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, our North Country at Work series takes us to Plattsburgh and the woman who hand-carved many of the community's public signs. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music out of Keene, that's Dennis Gallagher on guitar, Martha Gallagher on harp.
A bill that would extend New York State's ban on natural gas fracking is heading to Governor Kathy Hochul's desk. As Karen DeWitt reports, it's one of a number of measures that lawmakers are considering to combat climate change.
New York banned the hydrofracking of natural gas in 2014. Since then, a new type of fracking has been pioneered in China. It uses liquefied carbon dioxide to extract the gas from shale rock. Many environmentalists say the process can potentially cause earthquakes and acidify drinking water. Senate Leader Andrea Stort-Cousins says she wants to make sure it's not used in New York.
This is not just a policy decision. But it's a moral decision to protect the lives of our constituents in their communities.
Senator Leo Webb represents parts of the Southern Tier, including Binghamton, where the underground shale rock contains untapped natural gas. She says over 6,000 landowners in her district have received land leasing offers from fracking companies wanting to use the liquefied CO2 to extract the gas.
If we don't close this loophole sooner rather than later, it is going to essentially open up a proverbial gateway for further exploration, which is also going to be problematic.
Both houses passed the bill earlier this month. It next goes to Governor Hochul. Senate Leader Stort-Cousins says she doesn't know if the governor is on board with the fracking ban extension because the two have not discussed the issue.
It is my hope that she is.
A spokesman for Hochul says the legislation has not yet been sent, but when it does, the governor will review it. The bill is one of several in the 2024 legislative session that addresses climate change. A measure known as the New York Heat Act would eliminate a policy that allows gas companies to charge ratepayers for the cost of installing new gas lines if they are within 100 feet of a home or business. The Senate approved the legislation, and Hochul included it in her budget plan. In addition, the Hochul administration is implementing the Climate Change Act. It aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to zero by 2040. It also bans natural gas hookups at newly constructed buildings beginning in 2026. Senate Republican leader Robert Ort, whose party is in the minority in the legislature, disagrees with those measures. He says they'll result in the loss of good-paying jobs in New York's energy industry and higher prices.
Bottom line is the people who put down our infrastructure, they are going to be harmed. The people who pay for that infrastructure are going to be harmed. Our ratepayers are going to be harmed at a time when all we hear about is affordability.
Ort spoke at a news conference on the Capitol's Grand Central Staircase. One floor above him, anti-climate change advocates were rallying. Senator Jessica Ramos, a progressive Democrat, addressed that rally. She says some residents in her East Elmhurst district in Queens drowned when unprecedented rainfall during Hurricane Ida, which is believed to be connected to climate change, flooded their basement apartments. She says she'll be pushing to make sure the state stays on track in its goals to reduce emissions.
And we cannot wait! We cannot wait any longer! I will not wait for another one of my neighbors to drown!
In addition to the other measures, Senator Ramos backs the Climate Change Superfund Act. It would require big oil companies to pay for damages caused by climate change. She says it could net $3 billion to the state to fund efforts to reduce greenhouse gases.
This is how we want to use our taxpayer dollars, that this is how we want these companies to pay so that we have the funding to put shovels in the ground and update our infrastructure as our health outcomes require.
The Climate Superfund Act is included in the Senate's budget proposal. The Assembly didn't add it to their plan, but they included language saying that they support the concept. The measure is opposed by the major oil companies. They say it would be a retroactive tax. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
The state controller says three North Country villages are in fiscal stress. Those are Chateauguay in Franklin County, Sackett's Harbor in Jefferson County, and Whitehall in Washington County. The controller's office rated those municipalities as susceptible to fiscal stress. The ratings are based on self-reported data from last year. They take into account factors like deficits and revenue. The controller's office says several other North Country villages failed to file their annual financial reports, and that means their fiscal stress ratings couldn't be calculated.
A Watertown man is accused of stabbing two people with a machete. Police say 18-year-old Shaquan Bullock struck a man and a woman outside the Little Caesars on State Street Tuesday afternoon. According to the Watertown Daily Times, the alleged incident followed a verbal argument between Bullocks and two other people. Police say the woman was treated at Samaritan Medical Center and released. The man was flown to SUNY Upstate Hospital in Syracuse, where he was listed in serious but stable condition. Bullocks was charged with two counts of felony assault and one count of misdemeanor criminal possession of a weapon. He was in custody at the Jefferson County Jail as of Wednesday afternoon.
An Adirondack-based tourism agency has launched a solar eclipse helpline. The Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism, known as ROOST, is staffing a dedicated phone line to share information and answer questions about events, safety, and other topics. The helpline will be live through the day of the total solar eclipse, Monday, April 8th. And the number to call is 518-621-3682. And that number is also on our website at ncpr.org.
And two North Country SUNY schools are starting job training programs to teach students how to better support people with developmental disabilities. Lucy Grinden has more.
The North Country has been dealing with a shortage of direct support professionals, or DSPs, for years. There just aren't enough workers to meet demand from people with disabilities. Last week, Governor Kathy Hochul announced $32 million for DSP micro-credential programs. The funding will expand existing programs at SUNY schools. It'll also launch new ones, including at SUNY Canton and North Country Community College. The goal is to train 6,000 students by 2030, boosting the number of direct support professionals and improving the skills of people who already work in the field. The programs will teach things like assisting with physical needs, following ethical standards, and crisis intervention. Students will earn certification from the National Alliance for Direct Support Professionals. They'll also get SUNY micro-credentials to put on their job resumes and college credits, which they can apply towards degrees. And the programs will be free. Tuition, fees, and books will all be covered. Classes already began this semester at North Country Community College. They'll start this summer at SUNY Canton. Lucy Grindin, North Country Public Radio.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandresky. In just a minute, the Sign Lady of Plattsburgh, who's been making town and village signs for nearly 40 years. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note, how researchers are trying to trick one declining bird into returning to its native marshlands. That's coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Cloudy skies today, partly cloudy tomorrow, maybe some sunshine on Saturday. Highs this afternoon in the 40s, winds out of the west. Lows tonight near 30, maybe a scattered rain shower overnight tonight, tomorrow. Highs again in the mid-40s, and then on Saturday and Sunday, highs low to mid-40s. Maybe some rain, sleet, or snow on Sunday, what the Weather Service calls that wintry mix with highs in the low 40s. We have clouds and 40 degrees right now in Canton.
You may not know who Casey Ryder is, but if you've ever driven through Plattsburgh, you've seen a lot of her work. She's been hand-carving and painting signs for public works and private businesses since 1985. She's the woman behind the City of Plattsburgh signs and the Mountain Lake PBS Welcome Board and countless others. Amy Feiereisel spoke with Ryder in 2019. Here's her North Country at Work story.
Casey Ryder has two nicknames. The first is Plattsburgh's Sign Lady. The second is KC, which has replaced a name most non-Dutch people have trouble with.
Actually, it's Geeske van Rijnreider, but I got my nickname because nobody could pronounce my name. I'm from Holland originally, and I've been a sign maker at Morrisonville, New York for 35 years.
She's done it all from a tiny little garage off her kitchen. In the center are two wooden horses with signs on them.
Well, we're standing in my shop. I exclusively hand carve and hand paint signs, so there's no machines involved, except every now and then a router for an edge or my little jigsaw to cut the signs. So I have a bunch of chisels. I have shelves full of paint.
Right now, there are a couple small wooden signs in the shop, easy to pick up and maneuver. But Casey does a lot bigger, up to 8 by 16 feet. She's behind a lot of town and village signs and those commercial complex boards, which list different businesses. In the early 80s, Casey and her husband moved to Morrisonville, about 7 miles west of Plattsburgh. She was in her late 20s. She took a few sculpture and jewelry classes at SUNY Plattsburgh and fell in love.
I really enjoyed working with my hands. I just very much liked it.
With no woodworking experience, Casey started making signs for a friend's business. After a year, she went solo, finding work by cold calling companies. Then she landed a big project making signs for a developer's apartment buildings and hotels. Once she had a few signs out in the world, they did the advertising for her. That in Casey's confidence.
Actually, I was pretty brass at the time because I would go see a customer and they say, oh, can you do this? And even though I didn't know how to do it at all, I said, oh, yes, of course I can. I would go to the library. We didn't have the computers at that time. I would find out how to do it and do it.
And nothing compared to seeing her work lining familiar streets.
It was really a trip when I first started. You know, I would drive down. Oh, yeah, I did that. It bothers me sometimes when people don't take care of them. It really does. So often I go to the customer back and say, you know, you need to, this needs to be cleaned, or it needs a fresh coat of paint.
Casey really cares about her signs. She keeps photo albums of the ones she's made, partly to document her work and partly because so many of the signs are gone. She flips through one of the albums.
They go out of business. Like, I'm looking here now. 1, 2, 3, 4, all gone. 5, that one's gone. That one is gone. This one is gone.
Casey never expected to still be making signs. She'd assumed she'd put herself out of business.
It's going to be saturated, right? Everybody's going to have a sign. I was just waiting to see what I was going to do next.
But from the start, Casey had plenty of work. And having her own home-based business is what helped her survive when her husband unexpectedly died in 1987, leaving her alone with 2 young children.
Oh, I am so grateful that I actually found this niche, that I was fortunate to be able to be at home, you know, with my kids and still do what I love doing.
When the kids were little, Casey furiously worked while they were in school and after they went to bed. These days, her schedule is a lot more relaxed, but Casey says she still wakes up excited to work. She does everything from designing to hand carving the signs to layering on many, many layers of paint. She makes 30 to 40 signs a year, which sell from $150 to $5,000. The more expensive ones are either big or have tricky 23-karat gold leaf lettering.
The copy that is to be gold leafed, you put a certain size on it, which is like a glue. You got to wait for the right tack, and it's never the same. It depends on the weather, whether the tack is right or not. So you got to know exactly, otherwise you drown the gold.
Technology has changed a lot since 1985. Casey started out hand drawing and using wood. Now she designs on the computer and uses high-dimensional urethane, a hard foam material made for signs. But she won't give up hand carving.
It's like meditation. It's like you really get into the zone. It's like you don't have that with a machine. And I know I get a smile on my face. And I know it. I can feel it, that I get a smile on my face. I know when I'm in that zone, it's just a happy feeling.
All of the signs she shows me are impeccable, but there's no particular look. Some are sleek and simple. Others are covered in swirls and curlicues. She creates in the style of her customer. I'm reminded of a chameleon. When asked for favorites, Casey points out an ultra-modern billboard and then an old-timey doctor's sign. Both were a fun challenge, she says. For North Country Public Radio's North Country at Work project, I'm Amy Feiereisel in Morrisonville, New York.
By the way, Casey estimates she's made at least 1,000 signs over the course of her career. Her story originally aired in the spring of 2019.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:23. Good morning. I'm Monica Sandreski here with Todd Moe. And we've got some new music to play for you. Canton musician Christian Parker is out with an album that pays tribute to the 60s band The Byrds. This is his version of Change Is Now.
Now, things that seem to be solid are not.
is the song Changes Now by the Kent musician Christian Parker as part of his new album that pays tribute to the birds. You can find out more from his website.
Time is 27 minutes past 8, and there are some events around our region that you can check out this week into the weekend, and you'll find more information at ncpr.org. Check out our community calendar. Consider this. This is a series, an ongoing series at the Remington Art Museum in Ogdensburg. You can join the guided exploration of Remington's 1888 painting, Snug Island, at the Remington, or remotely via Zoom. On-site participation is free. Remote is free. Let the folks at the Remington know you're coming. It's noon to noon 30 today at the Remington Art Museum in Ogdensburg. Consider this.
That is a really cool program, actually. I've been before, and you just sit in front of one piece of work at the Remington Museum, and it's sort of guided with the curator there just to sort of consider the way the light works, the way shape is, the placement. It's a really, really cool program. That's Consider This at the Remington Museum in Ogdensburg. Also coming up, don't forget to check out the exhibit at Tupper Arts in Tupper Lake. It's Total Eclipse of the Art exhibit, starting April 4th and running through April 7th. They say, join us for a celestial journey into eclipse art. Experience the captivating blend of art and this once-in-a-lifetime event as local artists showcase their talent to celebrate totality in Tupper. You can find out more from tupperarts.com.
There's fiddle music, folk, blues, roots music tonight at Moose McGuire's Pub and Grill in Brockville, Ontario. Join Pat Johnson and Billy McInnes. They've toured around Canton for years, and they'll be performing fiddle tunes, guitar, mandolin, strings, working overtime tonight, 7 to 9, at Moose McGuire's Pub and Grill, downtown Brockville, Ontario.
And don't forget that the annual St. Lawrence County Cancer Fund / Edward Moses Walk Run for Life is expanding this year. Its event will also be at the Potsdam Elks Club and in Ogdensburg at the Ogdensburg Free Academy Golden Dome, as well as the traditional site in Canton at St. Lawrence University. That's coming up in, well, 1 month from today, Sunday, April 28th, with registration starting at 9 o'clock and the event beginning at 10. That is the annual St. Lawrence County Cancer Fund run/walk. That is it for the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then after that, it's the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock, where we'll get caught up on all the morning's business news. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. Thanks so much for listening. Be well.